Hello, welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 9 through 16 of The Sun and the Star.
We get to see our favorites, the Trogs, again.
They are such funny characters. They're so whimsical. I feel like they're exactly what I want when I think of a children's novel, where things are just as they are and people just accept it as fact. Like the Trogs having hats, and they need to have a lot of hats. And that's just they scream, screech, and everyone is just having a good time with it. I love that about children's books, where that suspended belief is allowed.
Yeah, and it's still funny. Like, I'm like, this is something that's funny to a kid, and I still think it's funny that these little guys have hats. Except I remember we did a research on the characters, and they're not little guys.
They're actually not.
Like, giant, creepy humanoid lizards, but I like to think of them as little frogs.
Yeah, me too. I think little frogs, little cartoon frogs is what I'll decide what they look like.
Yeah. Yeah, the further, like, these books get into, like, the weirder the myths, the more I'm like, I cannot imagine this ever being adapted into live action. This needs to be animated. Like, I can't imagine ever wanting to see a live action Trog that is accurate to the description.
Not like just that. I can't imagine the poor, like, design people sitting there trying to decide how the hell they're going to make it look believable. But like... like, them keeping Echidna looking like a woman the entire time might have been really smart, because we can't even possibly grasp the amount of legs and arms and shit she has on her bottom part of her body. So her looking just like a stern white mom made a lot more sense.
I wonder how they're going to do, what was that character's name? The one in the labyrinth with
Briar, that
person's enemy, the witch lady who like had animals floating around her abdomen, like she had like faces popping out. What was her name? It was like something with a K.
Cool. Because there was the dragon he was really scared of. That's not it. It was like her pet was the dragon.
I'm furiously typing. Yeah, I don't remember. Campe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I always imagine, I think because her name is kind of similar, Kamek from Mario, the witch.
I don't know Mario lore that well.
Well, I don't know what Kamek's gender is, to be honest, but Kamek rides around with a little, like, wand thing and will, like, send things at you when you're fighting Bowser. Oh. It's time to be real, apparently.
I always thought it was really funny. Her name is so, like, Campe. It's, like, so...
yeah. Ooh.
I don't know. It could be a great drag name, personally.
Yeah, she's giving camp. Yeah.
She's giving camp. And then instead, she's whatever the hell... I guess that's pretty camp.
It's pretty camp. The faces.
The faces in your abdomen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here today in The Sun and the Star, we're going to be talking about getting finally to the underworld, and we're going to learn what had been stopping the boys from entering it in the first place.
All right, so my chapters, I feel like, were the weird ones. Like, they were, I mean, yours were like fun weird, mine were just like, I don't know what's going on weird. So we open up, I have chapters 9 through 12. So before we dive into the chapters, we open up with another one of those little, like, canoe chapters with the flash-forward scene of Nico telling the nymph Gorgeera about the first time that he met Will during the Battle of Manhattan. And we get some more details about their predicament here, like why they're telling this random nymph their story. Apparently in exchange for the story that they're telling to her, they will receive a boat. And they're also not in Tartarus yet. They mention that they're not even in Tartarus yet. They're somewhere else. Will is really weak, but he recalls that they actually met before the Battle of Manhattan after Nico got an injury at camp. And Will, who was 12, was training to be a full field medic at 12 years old and tended to Nico's injury.
You know what? Peer-to-peer medicine works. All the NICU babies should be treated by other NICU babies.
Can you imagine a little baby with like a little like doctor outfit on and it's like,
it can't even hold its head up.
The doctor will see you. It has like adults holding its head up for it. You're right. We should do peer-to-peer education works. We should start doing peer-to-peer medical care.
I agree. I think a 90-year-old grandpa who can't see is going to be giving you surgery.
Yeah. We should have peer-to-peer, like, governments, because I think that babies would make a really cool world for other babies.
I know. They will allow other babies to lick the electric outlet because they should do whatever they want.
They would all die. Yeah.
But that's their right.
Yeah.
Peer-to-peer government.
Peer-to-peer government. Oh, anyway, Will was a full field medic at 12 years old, or trainee, sorry. Nico recalls first feeling like Will was his friend, though, because they met way back then, but he felt like Will was first his friend after they murdered Octavian together. They were so romantic. What a bonding experience. But when Will, like, showed up at his cabin or saw him the next morning and was like, why aren't you talking to me? And I liked that moment in Heroes of Olympus. So
that's cute. Nico needs to be chased. Callback. Yeah.
Yes. Nico, he's hard to get. He's plain hard to get, but he's actually not hard to get at all. He just needs like a little bit of attention and he blossoms.
I thought it was so funny because I was reading this and I was like, they haven't even made it to Tartarus yet. And this is like actually just couples therapy. Like it's not.
Literally. That's honestly one of my, I mean, I've also finished the book and I think overall like this scene as the flash forward feels lower stakes to me because they're not even in Tartarus yet. Okay, so, and then Gorgeira asks for more stories. She's like, I need more. I'm not giving you this damn boat yet. And the scene ends. So we go back to the present, and as we recall, they're stuck in like a weird time loop thing trying to get into the underworld. They keep waking up back in Central Park after going down a bunch of steps to get to the underworld, and something clearly isn't right. There's even a moment where Nico looks back and Will is gone, which is like definitely a direct call out to Orpheus and Eurydice or Eurydice when he looks back. And they kind of set it up like they literally went through the gates of Orpheus and the prophecy is saying that thing about like leaving behind something of like equal value. And so they're setting it up to have a lot of parallels to that myth. But Will is saying like, no, I've been here the whole time. I was right behind you. Will keeps also falling asleep and he's saying that he doesn't belong in the underworld. And then they keep waking up back in Central Park. And then the next chapter, we actually get a Will chapter randomly and we get a glimpse of what he's seeing. It's not like none of these chapters are first person perspective, but it's like limited third person. So Will is the person in this one. And he is seeing the underworld. Nico seems to think like Will, like they keep waking up back there, but he is seeing the underworld, but he keeps losing track of Nico, who is walking too fast ahead of him and then taking crazy risks, like jumping into the river Styx, and Will's like trying to follow him and jumps after him. And these like visions that they're having clearly speak to the different fears that the boys have. Nico's afraid that Will won't follow him and will leave. And Will is afraid that Nico will take stupid, like, life-threatening risks and leave him behind because Will slows him down. Which is very sad. So we finally then switch back to Nico's perspective in the following chapter, and we find him coming to in the stairwell beneath the door of Orpheus' entrance. He's completely exhausted. He sees Will about like 20 feet away, passed out on the floor, and Nico sees a creepy, shadowy thing looming over Will, saying, "Sleep, demigod." And this thing is described as having appendages that swirl and twist about its body, and it speaks in a slimy, slippery voice. Very creepy. Definitely sounds like a sleep paralysis demon that's sucking Will's soul from him as he sleeps.
What is a slippery, like a slimy voice? A slippery voice, like very watery sounding. Like
is it nasally?
His allergies. Nasal is not slimy though. Slimy is like like men who are creepy movies.
Just men.
Just men who like whisper and speak very softly.
Yeah. But yeah, like he's trying. Yeah, like he's like trying to sell you something. I
Yeah.
feel like that's what I think of with a slimy, or like trying to manipulate you. I don't have a good example of a slimy voiced
No.
character, but I'll find it. Nico confronts the creature and tells it to get away from Will, and the creature turns to face him. It turns out that this creature is basically like what Nico has on his fashion vision board. Like Nico describes it, and he's like, they have a spiked helmet of Stygian iron, half a dozen white milky eyes, a beak slash nose thing, and they wear a cape. And he's like, he was really cool. And basically, Nico is really into the way this creature is dressed. The creature introduces themselves as Epialis. Don't know if I'm saying that right, a nightmare demon who works for, quote, mother. Also, the demon introduces themselves as non-binary because I think Nico or Will, one of them, misgenders the demon, and the demon's like, I exist above gender, actually. I'm like, okay,
Okay.
cool.
That makes
First
sense.
canonically non-binary character in this book is a demon.
Thanks,
It's a good
Rick.
move, Will. Or Will, Rick.
Will.
Will did this. He wrote this book. No. His name is next on my list. So Will wakes up, and then the demon blasts them again with its appendages and sends them back into a deep sleep. I was like, I'm gonna do a little deep dive on Epialis, but it's not a deep dive because I only found a few sentences online. Overall, when I Googled Epialis, most of the stuff that came up was stuff about Rick Riordan. And there was like one site I found that had some stuff about what they were in Greek mythology. So Epialis was the personified spirit of nightmares, also known as the Melis Oneros or Black Dream. Epialis was probably numbered amongst the Oneroi, which are dream spirits and sons of the goddess Nyx. And they are dark-winged spirits of dreams. I thought this was interesting. Well, they emerge each night like a flock of bats from their cavernous home in Erebos, which is so cool. They're very cool. And they travel through one of two gates. And the first gate is made of horn, which is the source of prophetic god-sent dreams. And the other gate is made of ivory, which is the source of dreams that were false and without meaning, or nightmares, basically.
Ooh.
And I like the idea that every dream is either a prophecy or a false prophecy and nightmare.
You can't just chill and have a
No.
dream. Yeah.
Every dream is some kind of prophecy or like some god messing with you. I think that's fun. Anyway, so Epialis then sends Nico and Will into little trauma recap nightmares. We see like Nico sees when he learned that Bianca died, and Will sees stuff with his dad from Trials of Apollo, the Apollo from Trials of Apollo. And eventually, Will is actually the one to save the day. He wakes up, he. One of the things, like, Epialis is trying to taunt both of them, but is struggling to do both at the same time because, like, one will wake up and be like, hey. So Will wakes up, sees Epialis taunting Nico, and is so mad when he realizes what's going on and puts it together and realizes these have all been nightmares and not just, like, things that are actually happening, that he glows brighter than ever before and light erupts from his chest, breaking Nico free from Epialis's appendages. And Epialis kind of just like lets him go, honestly, at the end of this chapter. They compliment Epialis's work and is like, you've done really great work. And then they let him go.
Well, I think that Epialis is also very confused because during Nico's dream, Nico accuses Epialis of being the one who's been haunting him for the last couple months, and Epialis has not been the one who's been sending him those dreams. So at that point, Epialis is like, wait, like someone else is doing my job for me. I'm just doing what Mother told me, and like let's Nico go so that they can kind of chat, but also because Nico calls Will a Care Bear because his care, like, he erupts from his chest. And I think that freaks everyone out.
The Care Bear stare. Will's got it down. Okay, my notes from this section. I feel like I touched about them all. I did make fun of Nico. I was like, Nico fanboying about Epialis's outfit. Like, if I saw, I feel like if I saw that, Nico, I love you, but if I saw you in public, I would be so tempted to bully you. And I'm not a bully.
Just see the cape like going by.
Like,
when
his cape's on, yeah. And his, like, unwashed jacket that is in every single cover that we see with Nico in it. Oh, I love my son.
Mm-hmm. Son's a little bit of a mess, though, not gonna lie.
Yeah, he's a mess, but we love him.
All right, so I have chapters 13 through 16. All right, since you said the Care Bear stare, I am assuming you are well-versed in the Care Bear universe.
I actually have some Care Bear CBU. Lore.
Oh, mm-hmm. You yeah, have lore?
I do. I can get into it after you talk about Care Bears. I can see on our notes that's something you want to talk about.
I didn't have Care Bears. I didn't know anything about Care Bears. So when Nico was like, my Care Bear, I was like, what the fuck is he talking about? And I Googled Care Bear shooting lasers from their tummies. Oh. And it was like, the Care Bear stare is when they shoot hearts from their tummies, which can either cheer people up or defeat enemies. And I was like, the Care Bears have enemies? And so that led me through, that led me through a whole little deep dive of the nemesis of Care Bear. So the main nemesis is Wizard No Heart, but...
Wow, what a creative name.
I know, but there are... they battle against Professor Coldheart.
I remember that one!
He went to college. He got his PhD in cold-heartedness. This man is a doctor.
Yeah. He has a look.
Professor Coldheart.
Did you Google him?
No, I was looking at Wizard No Heart because he's just eyebrows and a hat, and I love him.
It's terrifying. That's what happens when the more you lose your humanity, you just become eyebrows.
Well, yeah. There's Professor No Coldheart, his assistant Frostbite, and occasionally Antifreeze.
Like antifreeze.
And then there's Wizard No Heart, his bumbling assistant Beastly, and his ill-tempered niece Shrieky. And there's also minor villains such as Dr. Fright and Sour Sam.
Ooh, Sour Sam. I like that one.
That's going to be Sam's new name. Oh my God, Professor Coldheart's brain is huge. That's a lot of forehead. Right? Yeah.
It's because he's no heart. He's all brain.
Oh. So the Care Bear stare hurts people who are heartless. But if you have a heart, it brings you joy.
Yeah.
Also, do you know the entire Care Bear clan, I will say, is related? So it's the Care Bear family? Yeah.
That's going to cause some problems. Like, do people ship the Care Bear? I don't want to go down that. There's fan fiction of everything.
They're like all brothers, sisters, mothers, cousins, aunties, because they're the Care Bear family. And therefore, they are a clan of Care Bears. And they single-handedly decided that they get to zap people into being happy and force your emotions.
So they're just like all descended from some weird mutated bear.
Yeah, 100%. One singular bear is the ultimate Care Bear. In the CBU, the
It's just like Nyx. The mother of all Care Bears. There has to be one singular mother.
I just like, Care Bears aren't a thing anymore, right?
I think they're kind of like a vintage, like, you know how like Gen Alpha and Gen Z kind of like are really into the like 90s nostalgia. I think I've seen like kids wearing Care Bear t-shirts.
Oh, okay.
I literally saw one at the mall like yesterday or 2 days ago.
Okay, because I was like, and there's no way that Nico not only knows what a Care Bear is, but knows the Care Bear stare, and then Will understands his reference.
Yeah, that feels like a Rick thing. I think it's way much more of a millennial and older reference. I don't know, though. Maybe it's still going.
I was not a Care Bear girl. I did not know anybody else who was a Care Bear, except apparently you. You were a Care Bear girl.
Oh, well, I have some lore in that my sister had a Care Bear, a deep I think a Care Bear problem.
Possibly.
Where she was really into Care Bears. She had like a ton of them. I used to like try to make her play with my Barbies, and I was not a fun person to play with.
That's true.
I like to just like name all my Barbies and give them like personalities, and would spend like an hour doing that and no plot would have happened because I'm like coming up with their backstories. And so she would always come down and interrupt my, she'd like bring all her Care Bears and make them Care Bear stare my Barbies and like stampede them. And I was like, because I was taking too long. So, but I also, in like the sixth grade, me and one of my friends,
I didn't know this part.
It was like a bit we did where we were like ironically into Care Bears. And
I feel betrayed.
I remember for my 12th birthday, I got a ton of Care Bear stuff as like a joke. Like it was like a bit that me and my friend Abby did. That we were like obsessed with Care Bears for like a year for no reason. And I don't know. I can't explain that.
I don't know. It just kind of sounds like happened. You guys liked Care Bear.
Yeah, but like I felt like I was reclaiming it, you know, because I was... I hated them a lot as a kid because of my sister's love for them. And I was like, I'm actually getting in touch with my inner Care Bear.
Your childhood as a, you know, a 12-year-old.
Yeah. My favorite was the yellow one, Sunshine Bear.
His name is Funshine Bear.
Uh-huh. I've seen the pink one before on t-shirts.
Cheer Heart. The knowledge is within me.
Her name is actually just Cheer Bear. Erin is wrong. If you Google Cheer Heart Bear, apparently there's a collab at some point where they made versions of bears that were mashups between two bears, and Cheer Heart Bear exists as a mashup between Cheer Bear and some other bear. Now, the disturbing thing is if you go to this page on the Care Bear Wiki, which exists, there are NFT-only mashup Care Bears, which is a concept that's terrible. And I hate knowing that.
I thought I was about to teach you something about Care Bears. And then you said the Care Bear stare without any, like, prompting. So
I didn't know they had so many enemies. The enemy thing is new. It's kind of funny because I remember you, like, early podcast days saying you want an enemy. And even the Care Bears have enemies. So you need to work on that.
Care Bears have enemies. What the hell, man?
Yeah.
They have a whole category villain section in the Care Bear Wiki.
That's wild. I didn't watch the show super intensely. I mostly just like
fake fan.
Got the bears. Ironically, did I even know what that meant? I don't know. I was doing a bit. I was 11. And I didn't know there were so many villains, so I did learn something.
There's like they've alphabetized all of the villains. There's Rat King. Many? Yeah. Dim and
Ooh,
Dumb.
Rat King.
I mean, this
Rat
show.
Rat King sounds fun.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, normal. I feel like it's from the Nutcracker.
There's always a... They're really into... Like, I feel like there's always a Rat King, you know?
Yeah. We were the Rat
In
Kings
all aspects
all
of life. Yeah. The Rat Kings were the friends we made along the way.
Truly.
Anyways.
I just think the Care Bear has been going on since the 80s? When did Care
Yeah, I think
start?
So.
So it's just like, if it's still a thing.
It's old.
Yeah. Okay, so origins. Okay, so it started in, sorry. The cartoonist. In 1982.
Oh, wow.
And then it got a revival in 2000s. And then again in 2017. Yeah. Kind of had a revival. So they have a lot of episodes that they have to create villains for because they have to use the Care Bear stare. There's only so many problems this one family can go through.
I'm shocked that they're all related because I feel like there's vibes between some of them.
That seems like something that you...
Maybe it is. Yeah, maybe. We'll have to look into that.
Anyway. Okay, so back to the... Back to
this
the
is
book.
A podcast now.
I know, so sorry. I went deep into it. I did this very late.
I love
tonight.
It.
So Nico has Will resting his head on his lap while Nico reexamines his life. A lot of these chapters have been Nico trying to figure out why he's a goth, essentially. He's like, why am I drawn to the darkness? And he thinks about, he's feeling a lot better now that he knows it wasn't Hades who was stopping him from coming into the underworld. It was instead this sleep paralysis demon, and that makes him feel a little bit better, but he's also trying to figure out, Hades had said, will you be the only son or child of Hades that's happy? Because none of my children have been happy. And Nico's like, am I happy? I have a boyfriend. And according to the universe of the Rick Riordan universe, that should automatically make me happy.
Yep.
But he is happy with his relationship with Will, but most of his anxiety comes from losing people he loves. And he's worried that if he likes Will too much, Will's going to die or leave him. And he thinks about the moment he started feeling comfortable with everyone in his life, those people have left him or died or been removed in some way. So Will wakes up and they immediately, Nico realizes, he's like, what was I worried about? My boyfriend's beautiful. Let's move on.
He's like, I have no problems. Look at this cutie.
Luckily for Will, unlike what Will had dreamt up, they don't have to jump into the River Styx. Instead, they have to take a little narrow goat ledge path because they're going to go see their friends, the troglodytes. So we learn that Nico has been going down there a few times already to check in on them. He's like, he wanted to make sure they got well adjusted to their new home and make sure they have everything they need. And Will really reflects the thing that I was thinking in this moment. Is Nico doesn't just forget about people. He's very... good about checking in on them. He went and checked in on Bob when Bob's memory got erased, gave him a job, all of that stuff. Same with the Trogs. And so Will voices that that's something that he really admires about Nico. Nico's blushing and it's like, I am actually the happiest man in the world. Throws off his cape, all that stuff. Anyway.
He gets a different colored cape, actually.
It's actually pink. Hot pink.
Yeah.
They get to the caves and they're greeted by hundreds of delighted Trogs. Will gifts them with a bunch of hoodies and they're lovingly invited into the Trogs' new home. The Trogs have a bunch of new outfits now because they can shop in the River Styx. And we find out that's where a bunch of broken mortal dream items are discarded when a person dies, like a materialized version of whatever their broken dream is also floats down this River Styx. Like, half-finished manuscripts, you know, like an empty baby cradle, like a lot of stuff that is just like rough. And the Trogs are like, a new hat, or like, this is great free furniture. Facebook Marketplace who?
I love the idea that like someone's abandoned dreams are like a hat. Like, did they really want to be a cowboy or something?
Yeah, this is like their police cap. This is their baseball cap of their favorite baseball team going to the playoffs or whatever. But Will's kind of horrified of it. Will, now Nico thinks it's really cool. He's like, yes, this is very innovative. The Trogs also have just done a great job with where their new home. They've really built out Trog HQ. They added hydroelectric power using diverting the River Styx because the River Styx does not harm the Trogs. And they've also introduced recycling. Nico is very impressed. Will and Nico are fed tomato soup, which Will at first was like, what are you feeding me? Is this human food? And the Trogs are like, Screech Bling is like, yes, of course. I've learned about human food. They think it's delicious. And then they find out it's made out of lizards. And the noodles are actually just shoelaces. Will is kind of horrified. He's like, please stop making me wear stupid hats and eat this stuff. And Nico is like on his second bowl at this point. He thinks it's delicious.
Nico's like, I'm a Trog now.
So the Trogs listen to what Nico and Will kind of say about them having to go to Tartarus. And they say they actually believe that something is stirring in the underworld, but they can't tell what it is. The change has led to a new smell around them. And actually that smell is all over Nico and Will. Nico thinks about it and wonders if it has anything to do with Mother, that our pal Epeleus, what did we decide?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Had been talking about. And he asks the Trogs to assemble a council to chat. And the council gathers, and Nico explains that he thinks that the smell is Nyx. So we've talked about Nyx previously in episodes, but I thought we would have a good refresher. I pulled up Nyx's Wikipedia. Let's get into it. So Nyx from the House of Hades, where Annabeth and Percy run into her in Tartarus. they meet her and they're immediately confronted with the fact that they will not be able to defeat her in combat. Like the others, Percy's become really strong. He's tortured people in Tartarus. They've managed to get away and fight off a lot of these monsters. Nyx is the ultimate being. She is, she existed before the Olympians. They're not going to be able to fight her. So Annabeth uses big brain energy and tricks her instead to thinking that they are just mortals who came on the package tour of Tartarus. And Nyx is actually not on it because she's not cool enough to be included. They then ask, Nyx is very hurt by this, and Annabeth asks if they can take a picture of her favorite child. And that causes a huge commotion because all of her children fight each other. And Annabeth and Percy are able to slip away into her mansion of darkness or whatever.
Such a classic Annabeth and Percy trying out shenanigans. Dumb villain. Such a classic shenanigan.
So Nyx is the goddess and the personification of the night. So by herself, she doesn't need any man. She produces a brood of children who are all the personification of primarily negative forces. Like the ones that are included are doom, destiny, day, darkness, blame, pain, distress, fates, retribution, love, deceit, old age, strife, and there's a bunch of others. Madness, the Furies. Though some of those she needs a man for, like they're the daughter of Nyx and Uranus. But basically Nyx is the mother of a lot of different creatures and a lot of feelings and fear in Greek mythology. She's often described as a black-robed goddess who drives the sky in a chariot pulled by horses, and it is said that even Zeus in the Iliad, Homer says that Zeus even fears is to displease her. Nobody's trying to cross this woman. She gives prophecies to Zeus. She gives prophecies to other people. I learned that historical evidence that she had a cult, and she also had an oracle. So alongside of oracles of like Dionysus and Zeus and Aphrodite, there was also an oracle of Nyx. And I feel like that just carries so much more weight. Can you imagine someone's like, oh, I'm the oracle of Dionysus, the goddess, god of wine. And you're like, I'm literally the oracle of the night and fear. Like, shut the fuck up.
Ooh, that's so cool. I like the cult thing. I love the like ancient Greek cults.
Me too. They said animals were also sacrificed tonight. Ovid talks about black roosters being slain, black bulls, black sheep. They read anything that is like black colored. They were like, as an animal, they were like, this is probably a great sacrifice item because Nyx is all about color schemes.
She's a goth queen.
Goth queen. She is Nico's mother. She's the mother.
Yeah. The mother.
So Nico realizes that he has to tell Will his experience with Nyx. Therefore, talk about the time he went through Tartarus, because in order for Will to understand why Nico is so afraid of her, what his history is with her, and he doesn't really want to talk about Tartarus, but he's like, about time, the Trogs are his friends, Will is his friend and boyfriend, so he starts his story. In his flashback, we see Nico has been trudging through the underworld for a while. This is back right before, I think, the House of Hades time. Nico is trying to go close the doors of death himself. He's struggling through the underworld, and he's then suddenly attacked by a chimera, and we see our old friend Echidna, the mother of monsters. I noticed that all of these, like Nico also takes a lot of his fighting from Percy, because that's who he watched grow up and fight monsters off. And so he tries to do the flattery and trickstery things, and Echidna calls out Nico and being like, that's what Percy Jackson does, and you fight like him. Like, this is very similar, and is really annoyed and immune to Nico, and ends up backing Nico up into a pit of Tartarus, and Nico falls into Tartarus. So Nico's still trying to process that he's here and all the horrors he's seeing, when suddenly a three-headed basilisk turns on him and Nico runs. Nico is like running and being attacked from all sides. He's blindly being attacked by every monster possible. He's just swinging his sword. He's running until he sees a house that looks like it's right out of suburban America, and there's a woman waving to him. He runs to meet her, and he meets Nemesis. Nemesis, as we remember, is Ethan's mother from the PGO series. Nemesis wants to help demigods ever since Percy has made a bigger effort to include her in shrines to minor gods. She wants to help. She senses the imbalance in Nico's heart, but she also has very limited powers in Tartarus. Nico thought that Tartarus would make her stronger because all the monsters there want are basically born wanting vengeance. But she says that instead splits her and tears her apart because she's trying to be everywhere at once to give them the vengeance that they seek. And it makes her actually much weaker in Tartarus. She gives him pomegranate seeds, which we see and are the reason he stays alive when he's in that little vase glass jar by the giants, and tells him to follow the river of fire, and that will lead him to the doors of death. Nemesis then transports him there to a slightly safer area, but it's a place where monsters regenerate. He watches in horror as an Empusa crawls out of like what he calls as like a pimple of Tartarus. He kills it immediately and it's really bummed out. It's like, I just regenerated, dude. He then walks away quickly because he's like, I can't stay here and see what else comes crawls out of the pimple.
I love that they use the pimple thing because Percy and Annabeth also used that, didn't they? Like they described them as
a pimples. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, that's just what it looks like. Like there's no other explanation.
Yeah, it's like gross. It's just like pussy. Ugh. Anyway, I've been rewatching Parks and Rec, so this is why it came to the top of my head. But Will's reaction to the Trogs and their lifestyle kind of reminds me of Parks and Rec with Ben reacting to Lil Sebastian.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Where Nico is like, this is amazing.
And how everyone is like, this is normal.
Yeah, this is normal. This is amazing. And Will's just kind of like, what are you talking about?
I love how much Nico is a fan of the Trogs. He's like, look at them. They're environmentally friendly. They're renewable energy icons. And Will is like, these things are feeding me shoelaces.
And lizards, like, stop scraping lizards off the walls. Don't want to eat them.
Ew. Gross.
I also think it's, at first I was blaming Rick, where I was like, oh god, Rick and his fascination with mothers. Like, Gaia, and Echidna, and Mama, the aunt, and this. But I think it's also... I think a lot of it is Greek mythology as a whole loves the mother of monsters. I mean, religion and historically speaking, mothers are like very much the beginning point, right? So therefore they are the most feared in a lot of religions and stories. So it makes sense. I can't fully blame Rick. I can blame Rick for Mama, but I can't blame him for Gaia and Nyx and Echidna, so fine.
Yeah, Aunt Mama Rick created of his own accord, his own desires.
And he made us read that with our eyes.
He did. But yeah, the Greeks are real into mamas. Mamas and horses.
And horses, yeah, that's all Greek society at the end of the day was all about.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting that we see a full circle of Percy having helped the minor gods and done all that work in laying that foundation, actually ends up helping Nico and saves his life. Whereas Nico also did that by checking in on Bob a lot and telling Bob about Percy and Annabeth, making sure that they're okay. And like they laid this groundwork by just being good people and good friends to others. They help and save each other, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, they've both, like, inadvertently helped each other in Tartarus without being there at the same time.
All right, do you want to do some lightning bolt round questions?
I would love to. See, my chapters was just kind of, like, the weird dreams and epialies, so there wasn't as much content for me to pull from here, or maybe my brain is just broken, but what my first thought was... for my question, because epialis is just having a lot of appendages, and my question is, would you rather have a bunch of arms or a bunch of legs that you could, like, you know, contract and expand at will, like epialis does? Also, at will, the person.
Boo. Well, on one hand, if I could expand my legs, that'd be really cool. I'd become real thick, real fast. But I think I would want to have a lot of arms. I think having a bunch of legs would just make it really messy when I want to run, but having a lot of arms would make it more useful when I want to paddle faster, when I'm surfing, you know, because I'm a surfer now. And then
you're a surfer, you're a jock. I'm a surfer.
What can I say? And then grabbing items, holding things, it'd just be kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like arms as well. Like, it was a weird question, but I feel like it's pretty easy. And that able to hold a lot of things and do a lot of things at once. Cooking would be a lot easier. Typing. You could, like, get other stuff done while typing.
That's true.
You could hold, like, 5 dogs at once. I think that would be great.
Pet your dog with all 20 hands.
Yeah, that's what they need.
You know, it's what they deserve.
Yeah, I think that would be good. It's what they deserve, yeah. It's what they crave.
All right, obviously, I was going to say, I started my question of, like, what do you, if you were to die now, what do you think you would be discarded in the River Styx for you? But we don't have to do that. Jesus. I think I do that too much to us. So what do you think would be the funniest thing to be seen discarded in the River Styx?
I do think that, like, outfits are really funny. I think, like, a clown costume would be pretty funny to see. Like, someone's lifelong discarded dream is to be a clown. That's incredible.
I was thinking that, too. I was like, clown shoes would be really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the shoes specifically would be hilarious. Yeah.
I think it'd be really funny if, like, an item... I think it also relates the item to the person. Like, if you see someone who is, like, super serious congressman and, like, a sparkly glitter horse floats down. He's like, all he wanted to do was be equestrian or a pop star, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like a sparkling microphone. That one's kind of sad, though, because I feel like being a singer is sadder. But, like, being a clown, I don't know. I don't want to, like, diss the clown community. I respect the clowns. I always think of Cam from Modern Family when I think of clowns. Yeah, that's who I'm disrespecting, and I don't want to disrespect him.
That's fair. I mean, I already did my dream of being a clown. I am a clown every day, so, you know.
But good one. But have you ever worn the outfit? That's
I have not, question. Thank God. But that is true. Maybe my dream could be to wear the whole house outfit.
Yeah, you're not a real clown unless you wear the outfit. I don't have that desire.
That's what you're telling us now. What if yours was a Care Bear? The Care Bears you didn't get to have.
The ones that I never collected.
No. Yeah. Sunshine Megabutt, where are you?
Okay, but Megabutt, a Care Bear floating in the River of Styx is actually a very sad image.
Yeah, because it feels like a child died, you know?
Like a child. Rather than like a
girl in her late 20s.
It's like, I just wanted all the Care Bears.
Okay, so my last question is, did you ever make, like, mud pies or fake food as a kid? And if you did, what was, like, your weird soup or what was the recipe?
Oh, the recipe? I don't know that I had a recipe, but I definitely had a mud pie era. I remember, like, the little, like, plastic sand buckets, filling it with, like, friends, and you'd put, like, mud and sticks and, like, water in there. And I had a friend one time who said that the secret ingredient was to add your own pee.
Oh my God.
I did not add mine, but they added theirs. I remember, like, fake trying to feed the mud pies to my parents, like, being like, look, we made you dinner, ha 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 ha, and, like, trying to be like, have some of it. And it was just dirt. And they would, like, fake pretend to eat it. And he was like, wow, we really got them.
I love that. I love, like, being, like, the parents who play along.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, at least they'll get them off their back if they're going playing in dirt for a little while.
Yeah. Just, like, get their, yeah, entertain them for a while. Being little scientists.
I was, like, really intense with my mud pies. Mm, obviously, I never did anything normally. So I, like, had a bunch of, like, again, like, a lot of, like, sand buckets and things that we play in the sand with. And there was one of the things was, like, a sifter. No, it wasn't a sifter. It was just like, a strainer, essentially. And so I would take dirt and I would sift it so it was, like, really fine and clean. And, like, then I would take dandelions and I would grind them on rocks so it would make, like, a like a yellow paste, and I would like make cakes with like fake sugar because it was like sifted dirt, and it was very pretty, like ridiculously pretty. It was really funny because my friend who I grew up with was in the very opposite of me, and so everything was put into a bucket and just stomped on, and it was just like slapped onto the whatever table we're pretending to present on. It was like my version and her version.
Yours sounds nice. Like, you added some fancy things. Those dandelions.
I was like really intense about it. The trogs
would love you.
They would love me.
You could tell that my trog.
I grew up with a mom who was like very intense about cooking. So you can see that reflected in the way that I was cooking.
I was like, you were like mimicking.
Imaginary children can't just eat something out of a bucket. It needs to be plated.
You're like, it's about the presentation. They should have like one of those cooking shows, but with kids making mud pies.
I would love that. And then them just talking about it. Would the judges have to eat it?
I hope not. I feel like it's just about the presentation.
Yeah. I think it'd just be really funny afterwards. Like,
there'd be diseases.
100%.
You'd get sick. Like
a little bug crawling out of it. There would be 100%. Some child would be crushing bugs in there. You know that for a fact. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, that's a good question.
Thank you.
So welcome.
Well, we're going to continue with The Sun and the Star. We're going to go through chapter 17 through 24 next time. I keep telling myself I'm going to just finish it in one go. As of now, I'm reading it along with you guys. So I don't know what's going to happen. I'm assuming that we're just going to get more flashbacks. If they still haven't gotten to Tartarus in the flash forward, I don't know when they will.
It'll happen. They get there eventually.
I think like they're not going to even confront Nyx until like the last 5% of the book. So I guess we'll find out. And it's going to be Nyx is going to be like, hello, I'm nighttime. I'm darkness. And Nico's like, but I have my wheel flashlight and our love is so strong. And that's kind of how it's going to be. Aww. And it's going to end.
Adorable. Amazing.
They're going to defeat the villain with the power of love.
Of the Care Bear stare.
The Care Bear stare.
Just like my Barbies. Anyway, if you, dear listener, are interested in supporting us, the links to our Patreon, our Ko-Fi, and our merch will be in the episode description.
If you're interested in getting your voice on the podcast, the link to send us an audio message is also in the episode description.
And you can follow us on social media at Camp Half Pod. Email us camphalfpod@gmail.com. We love seeing your really nice, kind emails of everyone sharing their lovely thoughts with us.
And if you haven't already and you've made it to episode 132, please rate and review.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.